This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
The jazz saxophone of John Axon Ellis starts our program as usual. His new CD, By a Thread, is out in time for Christmas. You may check it out at johnaxonellis.com. Well, our program today features Focus, Fellowship of Catholic University Students, and we have three guests in our studio from Focus. These are campus missionaries. Angela Teltorst is the campus director. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Where are you from?
I'm actually from Mahomet, Illinois.
Oh, not far away.
Not at all.
Where did you go to college?
University of Illinois.
I've heard of it. Our second guest is Carrie DePlazis. Where are you from, Carrie?
I am from Rugby, North Dakota.
You've come a long way.
Yes.
Where was your undergraduate university?
In Grand Forks, North Dakota, the University of North Dakota.
And Mitch Menarek is our third guest from Focus. And where's your place of origin, Mitch?
I'm originally from Nebraska, and I went to the University of Nebraska in Lincoln.
And they have a football team, I remember.
They do, and we're getting better back to the old days.
Ah, good. Tell me what it means to be a campus missionary for Focus. Angela, let's start with you.
Certainly. We are trying to be an active presence on campus, really bringing the fullness of the Catholic faith in a very tangible way just by our presence on campus. Focus is a national organization. We were founded in 1998 by Curtis Martin and currently are serving over 30 campuses in 15 different states nationwide, and really trying to reach college students where they're at, acknowledging a lot of the challenges that college students face these days to live their faith, to live a moral life and a life of integrity. And so trying to meet them where they're at and invite them through one-on-one relationships, through small group Bible studies and large group leadership training to go deeper in their faith and live it in a very practical way in their college life.
When did you graduate from the University of Illinois, Angela?
Graduated in December of 2003.
And were there Focus missionaries on this campus when you were an undergrad?
Yes. They affected my life in a very profound way. I encountered them as a junior and was very quickly invited into a Bible study and was just brought great hope. I hadn't really experienced other young people who were really excited about their Catholic faith. And so getting to encounter other young men and women who were passionate about their faith, who were young, who were dynamic, and able to live it in a very practical way, which is incredibly exciting to me.
Now, Mitch, you've heard Angela describe her experience when you became a missionary on campus with Focus. You're obviously young, too, but did you feel pressure to be dynamic?
Well, I guess I think all of us are similar in the sense that we've all experienced that encounter with another person, probably that relational aspect of it that attracted us initially. So in that sense, I mean, I kind of wanted to had that same sort of impact on other students that the missionaries had on me.
When did you graduate from University of Nebraska?
I was also December of 2003. So,
is this your first placement with Focus?
Yep, I've been here for the last 3 years.
Okay, so you came here right after graduating from college?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what about you, Carrie? When did you finish college and how did you end up here?
Well, I just finished in May and I signed on with Focus before graduation, so I requested to be in the Midwest, and they sent me here. So,
and Angela, is this the place you came? You just stayed here after graduation, or did you go somewhere else with Focus and then come back, or do something else?
No, I've had quite an adventure with Focus. Upon graduating, I was assigned to Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts, for my first year, which is a pretty stark contrast from the University of Illinois. It's a very small private liberal arts college in beautiful New England. Yes. So that was very exciting and certainly a very different culture than my uproots and or my upbringing in the Midwest. And then last year, we pioneered Focus at Bradley University in Peoria. And so this is my third year in third campus.
Now, what does it mean to be campus director?
I'm also a missionary, just like the other staff members, but my role is slightly different in the fact that I act more as a liaison between our headquarters staff and our team. So my primary role is investing in our team and providing just a resource for them, but I also work with students as well.
Now, we have you three here in our studio. Are there other campus missionaries with Focus at the University of Illinois right now?
There are. There are four other teammates that we have, Jim Supernot, Matt Muller, and then two other ladies, Katie Crane and also Jessica Premer.
So a total of seven?
Mm-hmm.
And is that about the same it was when you were here as an undergrad, or did Focus have fewer people then?
We had five missionaries when I was an undergrad.
Okay.
So the University of Illinois is one of our flagship campuses. It's one of our larger programs, so we're blessed to have more staff members here to meet the needs of the students.
You mentioned that Focus was at Bradley University in Peoria. Where else is Focus on other campuses in Illinois?
It is. This is one of our largest regions and highest concentrations of schools. We're currently serving Western Illinois University, Illinois State University, Illinois Wesleyan, the University of Illinois, Bradley University, Loras College in Dubuque, Iowa, the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and hoping to expand to more in the near future.
How is Focus funded?
We actually, all of the missionaries raise their personal support teams. So we actually ask individuals to join our support teams with either monthly pledges or annual gifts. And so that is a large part of what we do, is actually spending time meeting with our ministry partners, sharing the vision of Focus with them, and inviting them to participate in a very active way by giving with their prayers and also with their monetary donations.
How much does it cost to support someone like yourself?
It certainly varies, but we strive to be financially responsible and to be good financial stewards. So in the realm of $20,000 to $30,000 to enable us to really meet the students where we're at, to have cars, to have cell phones, to have laptop computers, and also pay off college debt and save for the future. So we're not living a call to poverty, although we do try to live a very simple life.
And where do you actually live? For example, here at the University of Illinois. Mitch, let's ask you that.
Yeah, we just live over in Urbana in an apartment.
And do you share space together?
Yeah, we have all the missionaries living. The guy missionaries live together.
Okay.
The girls have an apartment in Savoy.
Okay.
So.
And in what sense is your life, well, tell our listeners what your life is like. Is it a communal life?
Well, I would say that we do a lot of our activities together. A lot of our work with the students is together, a lot of group activities, but also we mentor students and meet them where they're at. If they want to talk about their faith or learning more about their faith, we definitely meet them individually or in Bible studies or large group events. So.
And what about your own spiritual life? How do you maintain that while you're helping others? Angela?
We actually have a holy hour every day. As Catholics, we believe in the true presence of Jesus Christ in the Eucharist, and so we are actually able to have a Eucharistic holy hour every morning, where as a team we gather, we pray the rosary, and then we follow that with about half an hour of spiritual reading, either from the scriptures or from some other aspect of church documents, church teachings, lives of the saints. Things of that nature, and then we have another half hour just for mental prayer, conversation with God, and able an opportunity to really draw our strength from Him, because without Him we can do nothing.
Is social action a part of your spiritual life?
As much as we have time for, in a large sense, our social action comes through hopefully forming students to consider the world they live in and the impact that they could have on the surroundings. So it's more of an indirect with working with future leaders, but hopefully if we leave Focus, we'll be in the world and we have a more active role in the social things, I think.
What part does worship, attending Mass with other students, with others in the community play in your life as missionaries on campus? Carrie?
It is one of our highest priorities. We attend Mass every day along with our Holy Hour, and we love to attend it with students. A lot of our student leaders are there on a daily basis as well.
And where do you attend Mass on this campus?
St. John's Newman Center.
And that's right across from the library. It's so handy for students. Do you happen to know how long St. John's has been in that location?
I want to say the 1920s or 30s, if I'm not mistaken, or somewhere in that proximity.
It's a great location. You may not know, but in the history of this University of Illinois, there was some early anti-Catholic feeling. And an early dean had brought Protestant churches to this campus and encouraged Protestants to come and establish congregations all around the University of Illinois Quadrangle. But he didn't encourage Catholics. He was a Protestant, and many of the founders of this university were Protestants, the early pioneers. So there was some anti-Catholic prejudice early on. But with the founding of Newman Center, things began to change, and there was much more an acceptance and welcoming of Catholic presence here. Let me reintroduce our guest for listeners who may have tuned in late. We're talking with representatives from FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students, and this is a live call-in show, so let me give the phone numbers so that people who have questions or comments may join this conversation. I don't want to hog all this fun myself. Anywhere the program is heard outside of Champaign-Urbana, use a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station. Listeners on the Internet may use that number as well, who are listening at WILL.UIUC.edu outside of Champaign-Urbana, maybe even quite a ways away. In Champaign, there are several local lines that can be reached by punching in 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. We'll put you on the air with our guests from FOCUS. We're talking with Carrie DePlazes and with Mitch Menarek and Angela Teltorst. Angela is the campus director here and herself a graduate of the University of Illinois. Angela, let me ask you, how different is it to be on this campus as a missionary as opposed to being a student?
In some respects, it's similar because we do. I was fortunate to live at the Newman Center as a student and was able to see the missionaries on a daily basis. And as a missionary, we spend a lot of our time in the Newman Center. It's a neat environment where you already have close to 300 students living in close proximity, who a majority of which are involved in their faith to some extent. However, it is very different in the sense of, as a student looking at missionaries, it seemed that they were just hanging out all the time. You know, what were they actually doing all day? It was kind of a mystery. And now as a full-time missionary, I see just our experience, how much goes into this life and how challenging it can be.
Why do there need to be missionaries on this campus? There's priests, there's a chaplain at Newman Center, there's a mass offered every day at the St. John's Chapel. There are other Catholic churches in town. There are Catholics on the faculty and staff and many Catholic students. Why missionaries here?
Well, it'll sound like justifying my job here, but we have great priests that we work with and a religious community there. But the fact is there's a large number of Catholics on this campus, and some of them, lots of them, would probably not necessarily come to even Mass. They've maybe fallen away from their faith or just haven't really claimed it as their own. And I think that's maybe where FOCUS is a little different than what the priests would offer, which is the Mass and the sacraments, is that we're able to, in a special way, go out onto the campus and meet the students where they're at. So pose some questions of regarding their lives and stuff like that, where they're not necessarily seeking out spiritual help, but we can go meet them, you know, at the rec center or wherever they're at.
Okay, students are at bars often. Do you go there?
I can speak to this, yeah. I would like to think that we're normal people. I mean, we are, and of course that involves going to the bars on college campus. We have some of the best conversations come in the bars for me. I shouldn't say this from my campus director too loudly.
What about you, Carrie?
Yep, I do. One of the wonderful things about being a missionary and not being a student any longer is just the availability that we have. It's a priority to use our time with the students, and that includes being where they're at. And so three of the key things that we focus on as an organization and with the students are chastity, sobriety, and excellence. And so learning how to drink in moderation and how to be in that atmosphere and still be a presence around to those that are around you is amazing. And I know I witness the missionaries dedication to these three things, and I learned a lot about how to live a Christian life from them, just in these, you know, in the everyday situations at the bar, on campus, in the lunchroom.
So you talk about chastity, sobriety, and what was the third?
Excellence.
That's mm-hmm. a very broad term. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's stick with sobriety here for a minute. So you talk about helping people learn to drink in moderation. What if you find people who are alcoholics? What do you say to students who obviously, if they drink at all, are going to overindulge?
Yeah, obviously that's a prudent thing for them would obviously be to seek help from. We're not necessarily versed in helping those type of problems, but we have adequate resources to refer in those cases. But I think for the most part, for the average student, it's more of an issue of they've really never been shown the proper way to consume alcohol in a mature way, so they tend to swing to one extreme or the other. And so hopefully by being around, setting up a culture of, you know, responsible drinking, that's going to be beneficial for them.
Okay, let's sort of role play here for a minute. I'm sitting at a bar, or standing at a bar on campus, and I'm, let's really use your imagination. I'm 19 years old. Well, I've had too much to drink already, and it's only 10 o'clock. What do you say to me? Do you find out I'm Catholic, or does that matter? Do you talk to anybody?
No, we haven't talked to anybody. Okay. I mean, we're not exclusive to Catholics, okay. Of course, but I would, supposing I knew that you had drank too much, I maybe would mention the fact that I observed if I had a relationship with you. Realistically, if I didn't know you at all yet and it was just cold turkey, I might just try and approach it at a different time and just remove myself from the situation there.
Or offer me a ride home.
Exactly. We really try to work from a context of a relationship, okay. You know, so we don't.
But
really,
say you knew me. Say you'd see me in church.
Yeah, and if you were a leader, I would challenge you to, you know, maybe question your judgment on where your line of sobriety was and things like that. But, I mean, hopefully we can do it from a perspective where we're obviously living it by example first and have a rational reason for doing so. And so maybe talking about that with them and why it is a good thing.
Okay, Carrie, you were a senior just last year, up until mm-hmm. May. And let's say now you meet a young woman in a bar and you feel that she's so out of control. She might go home with somebody, might have sex with somebody unprotected. There's your chastity issue as well. What do you say to her?
I would definitely offer any help that I could as far as giving her a ride home or maybe talking to her friends that are with her that are a little bit in better shape, hopefully, and encourage them to help her as well. I think that would probably be the best, is just to offer a ride, offer any help that I can, and encourage your friends to do the same.
Okay. Now, you've picked these three items, or somebody has. Maybe are these national concerns?
These are national concerns.
These are national concerns. Mm-hmm. So people in Focus have seen these issues as important, very important around right. the country. Angela, you've been at two other campuses. How does drinking at the University of Illinois and the use of other drugs compare to, say, Bradley and Williams College in Massachusetts?
I would venture to say it's actually pretty standard with the other colleges I've been working at for the past several years. The other two areas are not a problem there certainly are special cases, but for the most part, our students are striving for personal excellence, both in their personal lives and also academically, because of the caliber of this university. And chastity, too, is something that certainly people struggle with, but I'd say the biggest problem is working with sobriety.
And tell us, how big a problem is it on this campus? Many of our listeners are well past their college mm-hmm. years. What's it like to be a student in relation to alcohol and other drugs today on this campus?
Certainly. I was reading a recent statistic that said that 40% of students today drink with a specific intention of getting drunk. And I think that we've seen that shift increase in a dramatic way over the past 10 to 20 years. When my parents, well, not my parents, I said my grandparents drank, it was more for social reasons as opposed to actually getting drunk. And so I think that we're seeing that students are using it to escape, and it's becoming very deadly, and I think that's very widespread.
Do you have programs to educate people about the difficulties of drinking on campus, the problems it can cause?
Once again, I think most of that comes from the context of the relationship. We don't have a broad program that we cater to groups, but like I said, telling the people, the students, hopefully explaining why it's advantageous to learn sobriety, what's the benefits of it, and how that affects the rest of their life, is the main context we work in, or that I work in at least. I don't know how the girls deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about sobriety, you're not talking about not drinking at all. You're talking about drinking responsibly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, we'd like to find a healthy balance, and we think it's a good that can be enjoyed if it's done properly.
Okay. Let me give the phone numbers to call again in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We'll let you ask a question or make a comment on the air with these three students. This is a live program every Sunday night from 5 to 6 p.m. That's 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana area. Elsewhere, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. The toll-free number, 1-800-222-WILL. Since we're not getting a call at the moment, let me ask maybe a strange question, but in the New Testament, the first miracle that Jesus is reported to have done was to be at a wedding celebration, and his mother says, "We're running out of wine. What can we do?" And he turns water into wine, his first miracle in Cana. Many Protestants for years said, "Oh, people shouldn't drink alcohol at all. It's so dangerous. Just stay away completely. Be teetotalers. You know, just don't drink." That's not part of the Catholic tradition. Catholics use wine with Mass every celebration. Where does the notion of sobriety come from? Here Jesus created wine.
Yeah, there's a obviously strong scriptural examples of not being drunk and avoiding drunkenness. But like you said, at the same time, there is this example of Jesus' first miracle. And obviously, we feel that the way that those things can be put together and cohesive is that if you drink without the intention of getting drunk. So we feel that the ability to rationalize and our mind is one of God's greatest gifts to humans. And the reason that we would avoid drunkenness is because that impairs our ability to rationalize and to reason, in essence, throwing away one of our greatest gifts. So a couple of drinks doesn't impair your reason or rational thought process. And so we feel that drinking is fine. Impairing your rational ability and making us like animals is not fine. So I think it's a thing that needs to be addressed properly, because I think that to have a teetotaler approach, oftentimes a student that hears that will immediately turn away from it because they sense something false about it.
Let's talk just for a minute about other drugs on campus. After alcohol, what's the most popular with students?
I've actually had very little experience with drugs in my 3 years. I would venture to say none with the students I've worked with, so I can't really speak to that.
Not much cocaine use on this campus, as far as you know?
I don't know if we're qualified to answer. I'm not sure. We don't deal with it. I mean, alcohol, for the students we deal with, it's never like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I would say it's fine, but I could be living in a bubble.
Okay. Marijuana?
More, I've never been around it. I've heard references sometimes, but realistically, I've been fairly impressed with the fact that what I've seen as far as students, that drugs don't, in the groups, the students we work with, haven't been a big problem.
So mainly alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about sobriety. One of the three main concerns of focus around the country, you're telling me, along with excellence and chastity. Why chastity?
I can go again on this one.
Sure.
We chose those three, I'd say, mainly because they're what almost every college student struggles with as they leave home and start to claim ownership in their decision-making. Those are the things that they're faced with, you know, especially sobriety and chastity in a very real way that they've never had probably when they were living with their parents. And once again, it's one of those things that it's tempting for people to swing to one extreme or the other. And we would like to avoid that as far as in chastity and sobriety and finding the middle ground and the appropriate, you know, rational way that we should deal with these topics. And so, but students are, I mean, when they leave their parents' confines of their home, and I think we've all been there in college, you know, that's the time when you make decisions, and if you, you have the power to go down either path to large extremes with sobriety and chastity.
Yeah.
Okay, if sobriety is described as drinking responsibly, is chastity described as being sexually active responsibly?
I'd say it's described as learning about your sexuality and putting it in the context of a proper relationship and recognizing that the sexual act is one of the highest forms of communication that humans have, and to do that outside of the context of a marriage relationship is inappropriate and ultimately hurtful. And we see that in students' lives all the time when they make that commitment through their communication that isn't truly there in the context of a permanent relationship. And that's where the context of the sobriety is the same, the basis for it is the same for us. It's ultimately because we feel that learning healthy relationships and how to live them out in a practical way is the key to happiness in this life. And so anything we can do to teach students that is going to help them live happier lives.
Angela, you're nodding. You want to add something to that?
Certainly. I think that there's a grave misunderstanding regarding our sexuality and specifically the sexual act and where and how that should take place and how that should be communicated. And so we strive to teach our students how to live excellence in their relationships. That's something that every student is curious about, is striving for, but really have received very little coaching or formation in. Things like friendship and dating relationships is something that we all deal with on a daily basis, but we don't really have a class on dating and relationships in school necessarily. And so to be able to first model that ourselves as missionaries, how to live a chaste life. You know, we are young adults, perfectly normal in every way, and to be able to model this is possible, I think is a very powerful witness for our students. And they see the joy that we radiate. They see the joy and the peace that we have. And to know that we are saving something that's very beautiful and very special for the proper context is a very powerful witness for our students.
So you're not saying that sex is bad?
It's one of the greatest gifts we have.
And when you say saving it for the proper context, let me push just a little bit. Are you talking about marriage or are you talking about commitment?
Marriage.
So a couple who's committed to a long-term relationship, you would still say should not be sexually active until they're actually married.
That's correct. We actually believe that the body has a theology, and we believe that the body can express in a very tangible way what we're saying with our mouth. And so if a couple has, you know, they're committed, but they haven't actually made a formal commitment before God and before the church, they would actually be lying with their bodies to engage in the sexual act without making that commitment before God and before their family and friends.
Certainly it would be less hurtful probably if it was done in the context of a loving relationship than if it was a random acquaintance. But we feel that we don't want to settle for mediocre in the terms of relationships because there's real effects and real people get hurt when they go bad.
What do you teach currently about for couples who are married about birth control? What's the Catholic teaching on that at this point?
Well, we're in line with the church on everything, and one of the things that's probably the hardest for Catholics nowadays to understand about the church is that they don't believe in artificial forms of birth control. And so we're in line with that. That's what we believe as well.
And this may be the first time this word has been used on WILL, but what about the Catholic teaching on masturbation?
Once again, it's they consider it wrong. I mean, obviously, with the Catholic notion of sin, we don't believe, you know, if someone's addicted to things like that, it's not like they're necessarily going to hell. You know, that's not our place to judge, but we can say objectively it's wrong, and it is leading to habits and addictions that impair their ability to live a healthy, functioning relationship. And in that sense, it's sinful objectively.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with three campus missionaries from FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. They're part of a team of seven who are young adults, recently out of college themselves, who have come to this campus as missionaries. Angela Telthorst is the campus director, and she is a University of Illinois graduate. Carrie DePlazes and Mitch Menarek are two other guests in the studio today talking with us about FOCUS and their concerns with sobriety, chastity, and excellence. Listeners who would like to ask a question, call us at 333-9455 if you're in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I'm the director of the University YMCA. The Y is one of the supporters for Keeping the Faith programs. It's the oldest Christian organization at the University of Illinois campus. It was founded in 1873 here by students. The Y is on the corner of Wright and Chalmers Street. We have been working developing student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service for the last 133 years on this campus. The Y began as a Protestant Christian organization, and over the years has become open to not only Catholics, but Orthodox Christians, as well as people of other faiths or people who have no religious tradition. The Y welcomes students to be active in our various programs. We have 12 programs currently, things like Alternative Spring Break, where we send out over 300 students to do service projects, social action on issues such as homelessness or children with AIDS or all kinds of problems around the country. Students go in groups of 12 and do a service project for a week, and they raise the money themselves to go do those projects. Over Christmas vacation, we have students who are spending a week together in several different places. And when they come back, they'll do a local project that's tied in with that that particular concern, such as homelessness. One of the Y's other programs is Vis-a-Vis, which recruits tutors from undergraduate students to work in the public schools with children at risk. And students will volunteer up to 2 hours a week, regularly volunteer 2 hours a week for a whole semester working with a particular student. Amnesty International is one of the Y programs that deals with issues of peace and justice around the world. The Y also has environmental programs for undergraduates and graduate students, Students for Environmental Concerns, Red Bison, which restores native Illinois prairies, the Rainforest Action Group, which is concerned with preserving rainforests around the world and dealing with issues of global warming. Those are some of the programs that students are involved with currently at the University YMCA. We also have programs such as Friday Forum. That will be starting up next semester. We're having a series that are dealing with the whole issue of interfaith relations. So there'll be a series of 8 or 9 lectures on Friday noons at the Y starting in early February. So those are some of the programs at the University Y. Let's get back to our program for today. Oh, I might just say that next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be taking a break. Next Sunday is Christmas Eve, according to the Christian celebration calendar. And so we will not be having a Keeping the Faith program that night, partly because I'll be leading worship at St. Peter's United Church of Christ on Russell Street in Champaign for their 7 o'clock Christmas Eve service. As a guest pastor there. We will have a special program that night for listeners. Sally Weeks will be our guest on Keeping the Faith December 31st. Sally has been working at the News Gazette for several years. She's a Baha'i, and she'll be traveling to Haifa in Israel to work at the Baha'i Center there, and we'll be learning about that trip on our program here live Sunday, December 31. Well, let's get back to our guest today from Focus. We're talking about the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. Missionaries is kind of, the whole term missionary is kind of a term that isn't used much these days. When you got to a campus where there were Focus missionaries, as an undergraduate yourself, were you surprised to find missionaries on a campus? Angela?
Yeah, it is kind of a surprising phenomenon. I think we often think of missionaries as being in Africa or South America, some remote country and land with a different type of people. But to actually have missionaries on our college campuses, really in our backyard, is a pretty novel concept, especially in present times. But we really do see ourselves as missionaries. We really see that for many people, they've heard about Christ or the Catholic Church or Christianity on a whole, but it's become irrelevant and deemed unnecessary or something of the past. And so we see ourselves as actually going on campus as witnesses. You know, I think that we're living in an age where hearing about Christ or Christianity is ineffective, and students need to see that the faith can actually be lived out in a real way. And so by the example of our lives, first and foremost, we are able to bring the fullness of the Catholic Church to the college campus and truly meet the students where they're at and hopefully bring them back to the fullness of the faith.
Now, the missionary part is a surprise to some people, but the Catholic missionary part is even another surprise, because many people who think of this kind of evangelism work think that that's only done by conservative Protestants, evangelical Protestants. Would you call yourself an evangelical Catholic?
The term has connotations now. I don't know exactly what they carry with them, but in the sense of evangelizing and spreading the good news, we would consider that, yes.
What about tactics? Some people who see Protestant missionaries on campus, Protestant evangelicals, perhaps with Campus Crusade for Christ or some of the other groups like that, worry about some of the methods used. How do you do this?
I think if I'm reading you right, I think you'd be referring to the preachers on the quad that are, you know, condemning people to hell and
sure.
things like that. The Campus Crusade missionaries that I know and that I've worked with aren't like that. Personally, I think that can be very scandalous to a student, and I don't think that's the appropriate way to reach out to a student who wants to just learn more about, you know, Christianity and the Christian faith, and they don't want to be told they're going to hell before learning. It kind of closes doors and makes them in an attitude that isn't really receptive to truly hearing things. But we do it through the context of a relationship. We train the students that we work with to talk to their friends about things and just ask them life questions and hopefully show them in a real tangible way that this is relevant. And for many students, to find a Catholic or a Christian who believes in this stuff and isn't addicted to some of the chastity or sobriety issues, that don't have addiction problems or things like that, a lot of times it's the first young person they've seen that is like that. So I think a lot of times it's just by being in their lives and an example, it certainly at least piques their interest.
How were you selected?
There is actually an interview process that we go through. The first part of that is sending in an application and also providing references, asking other people to fill out references for you, and then you get a letter affirming that you get to go to an interview weekend or you don't, and so that's the first step. And then you go to an interview weekend that's held in the region, and then a few short weeks following that, you'll find out if you are selected to be a missionary, if you're offered a position or not.
And you're selected and offered a position to then go out and raise your own money for your own salary.
It's kind
exactly.
of perplexing at the beginning, but
and you
exactly.
start with your family when you do fundraising?
I did.
Mm-hmm. And then where?
Starting with immediate family and friends, and from there, just like we use a relational approach on campus, we also have a relational approach to our fundraising efforts. And so after we've exhausted the spans of our family and friends, we might give a parish talk just to share the vision of what we're doing on the college campus. At our home parish, exactly. Oh. And then invite individuals who are interested or have the same vision or see a need for the work that we're doing with students to fill out a contact card so that we can actually get together with them. And so instead of just asking for a check immediately, we like to meet people in their homes to share with them the work that we're doing on campus, to share stories, to have them get to know us as individuals. And very oftentimes, you know, people just have had their own experience or know a family member who has left the church or left the faith during the college years and really see a need for this on campus. But because they are living their life with their family, their work, they're unable to make an impact. So they are able to be a part of our work, and we're able to be full-time on the college campus reaching out to students.
What's your home parish?
My home parish is Our Lady of the Lake Parish in Mahomet, Illinois.
Okay, so I'm sitting in the pew there on Sunday, and you've given a little talk, and you, I fill out this contact card that's there in the pew very handily, and you call me up, and you make an appointment, and you come and see my wife and me. What do you say? Why should we support you?
Well, we first off by saying that the philosophy of the culture today is the philosophy of the culture tomorrow, and there's a need that's so much deeper than just students not going to mass during the college years. We're finding today that where in the past, students would maybe stop practicing their faith for a few years in college, and then once they were married with children, they would start going back. But unfortunately today, that trend is no longer taking place, and students who are leaving the faith are leaving it for good. And from my own personal experience, I know that living the faith is the key to happiness. And I would venture to say that there are many broken families and broken relationships and broken hearts in the world today as a result of walking away from their Catholic faith. And so by sharing the work that we're doing, by sharing the stories, by sharing really our own story, I think our own personal story, my journey and how I became a Focus missionary and how I've come to embrace the fullness of the Catholic faith is one of the most powerful things that we can tell to people. Just by being a young, faithful Catholic person is an anomaly in a very real sense, and that intrigues people.
What was your undergraduate major?
Psychology and pre-physical therapy.
And Carrie?
Speech pathology.
Mitch?
Mechanical engineering.
Do you have any sense that you were selected partly because you were good looking?
I would certainly like to think that way, but these girls will probably tell you that's not the case.
Interestingly, that's been a problem with Protestant groups. People often in the past, when they recruited people to work on campus, would pick people, yes, who were bright, yes, who were committed, but also there was this tendency to pick people who were pretty. And it always bothered me because it always made me think, are college students that superficial that they'd only want to be with people who are physically attractive?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. I do think that one of the greatest opportunities for reaching out to people is the case where you maybe, if a person, I mean, one of our greatest saints of recent times is Mother, Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta, and she's an anomaly to people because she didn't have money. She didn't have, the good-looking husband with a SUV and the big house. But yet she had an inner peace and a happiness that perplexes people, I think, when they see that. And the Christian message, obviously, there's no correlation between happiness and good looks. And so not that good-looking people can't be good Christians, but maybe if you weren't so good-looking, it would be a case where you have a greater potential to show people that that is not the key to happiness. I'm happy and like that.
Tell me a story of some student, anonymously, of course, not mentioning them by name, but that where you felt you made a difference this last semester. Anybody think of an example? Carrie, you're smiling.
There's so many examples, Steve, but one that really touched my heart and was a great witness to me was one of the students who came from a background where the family didn't really go to church. They were Catholic, but they didn't really attend Mass or really practice the faith, but she came to college and lived the typical college lifestyle, just the drinking and the partying a little too much and a little not enough of the studying. But then she met a Focus missionary last year. Actually, she met one of the students first that was involved and got introduced to it, and she joined a Bible study, and this year she committed to leading her own and has really come to embrace the faith and in that also embrace the lifestyle of sobriety, chastity, and excellence. And she is on fire. She's excited to share faith with others. And she is also ready to go home and talk to her family more about faith and how she really wants to embrace it and wants to share it with them too. So that's, I guess, we hear those kinds of stories every day, but that one was one that I heard most recently, one of the students I work with.
I've got one if we have time.
Sure, Mitch.
I was working with a student who was getting his master's degree in structural engineering here, and through his involvement with Focus, he went on one of our foreign mission trips. We do that in the summers as well, and he went to Peru, and he was working at the time for a structural engineering company in Chicago, and after this Peru trip, he's now taking it upon himself to lead another one, and they're working with some of these shanty towns, using a structural engineering knowledge to stabilize some of these landslide problems and stuff that they have down there. But basically just seeing him go through the process of realizing something that Pope Benedict has said over and over is man is not made for comfort, man is made for greatness. And I think that's something that as Americans we need to transmit that message, because we're finding people like my student that I worked with, who he had a great structural engineering job, he had everything, you know, financially that he needed, and yet there was something missing. He wasn't happy because he didn't feel that he was living a great life once he went to Peru. And I'm not saying that you can't live a great life as a structural engineer, but for him, he has a passion with his life that he can make a difference in these people's lives. And that's something that I think people just give up on, whether it's due to lack of example or something else. But to see him have a new passion for life and really take the world by the horns and take the bull by the horns and try and change the world it's been fun to watch.
Listeners who want to ask a question to Mitch, to Angela, or Carrie can call 333-9455 if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area. If you're listening elsewhere, there's a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And remember, if you missed part of this program and would like to hear it, it will be archived on the WILL website. You may find it at WILL.UIUC.edu. Then go to AM 580 and look under the listing on Keeping the Faith, and you'll find previous programs. So this program will be available on that website in a week or so. Mitch, you were talking about doing a foreign mission trip to Peru and dealing with people there who are victims of landslides. I've known people who've traveled in Peru, and the Catholic presence there is notable. But where do you draw as an educated Catholic today, a graduate of a college in engineering, with superstitions? People who've had landslides in those villages, who then go up and put a cross at the top of that valley above the village and think that's going to protect them. And then they get wiped out again. Why not move the damn village?
Right. Obviously, with most things, I think education's huge. Probably we have a great sense of responsibility in this case, I would think, to do that, because, like I said, U of I has, in this case, one of the, if not the top, I think it might be the top structural engineering program in the country. And I think this is a perfect example of that student being able to go and educate them on the practicals of, you know, soil. I'm not a structural engineer, but yeah, the basics, just the education that we have is such a great blessing in this country, to have such great universities and the financial prosperity to be able to pursue those things, that I think we have a great responsibility to educate those people on things like that.
Let's talk a little bit more about education in relation to theology. How did you learn Catholic theology enough to be a missionary?
Curtis Martin, our president and founder, brags that in 1 week he can train missionaries to know more than 98% of the entire population as far as with regards to scripture and theology. But you have to keep in mind that most people can't read, and very few people actually study scripture. But we actually go through an intensive 6 weeks of summer training prior to stepping on campus, where we study the practicals of theology, a little bit of philosophy, how to lead a Bible study, catechesis, community life, just various things that will prepare us for our work on campus.
Let me push a little bit on that. Had any of you three studied had you had any college-level courses in, say, religion or Christianity or theology?
No, and I can speak for myself to say that going in, I was pretty unprepared, and I don't know if they should have hired me. It was, but there's, I think, one sense of that's the importance of a team, is hopefully through and working with pastoral staff, we can refer people to when we don't know the answers. And I would never sit there and claim to know answers to some of the deeper theological issues, but I think we would have, through living in our team, a sense of what we're striving for, and we know to refer students to people that know more of us on the technical theological issues.
What about you, Carrie?
I hadn't had any prior training other than youth group and that kind of thing when I was growing up.
Angela?
I had taken a few classes here at the University of Illinois with Monsignor Stuart Sweatland and Dr. Kenneth Howe and some basics in theology, but really very minimal. So anything that I learned had been self-taught or learned within Focus.
And when you're in Focus as a campus missionary, say here at the University of Illinois, is there sort of continuing education? Do you get courses? Do you get what are you reading? Who are you talking with? Do the priests work with you, the sisters?
That's a good question. Go ahead,
yeah,
Angela.
We are actually, this upcoming semester, our entire team will be taking two different classes at the University of Illinois that are offered to all college students, one on morality, another on modern Catholic thought. And there's an opportunity to keep sharpening the saw, continue asking you know, the hard questions and keeping our minds mind sharp. We also do team development, where we study four different areas over the course of a year: culture, community, prayer, and scripture, where we actually read various books together and have discussions, again, to foster just our intellectual life. And we also have a reading plan that we read systematically through all of scripture and also the Catechism of the Catholic Church, in addition to church documents, encyclicals, the Vatican II documents, and things of that nature over the course of our tenure within as missionaries on campus.
There's a huge difference within Catholicism between extremes. There's political differences, there's theological differences. Are the students who are campus missionaries in Focus closer to one end of that spectrum than the other? Is there variety? Do you have people who read and quote Rosemary Ruther as well as the current Pope? Where are you on those issues?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're not as diverse as the Catholic population, which is a billion, you know, and we only have a couple hundred missionaries. But I think there's a lot of diversity even within our team on issues like that. But we are, like I said, obviously, we're in line with the Pope on, you know, we're following the Pope and his church. And so hopefully there's not deviation that would separate us in the sense of ceasing to be Catholic.
Yeah, I would just add to that we would consider ourselves neither liberal nor conservative. We're Catholic.
Okay. Well, let me just check that out a minute. What are you going to do in the future? Focus is for young adults. You're eventually going to get married. You're going to have kids. You're going to move somewhere. You're going to get tired maybe of living on $20,000 to $30,000 a year and maybe become a priest and earn less. What? But only one of you could become a priest. Wouldn't you females like to be priests?
No, not particularly.
We would, as far as where the average missionary falls on that issue, I think they'd probably be in agreement with the church, which is, it has been declared that, you know, it is reserved for men to be ordained as priests.
But that is an issue within the Catholic Church, and there's certainly a lot of discussion about it and concern, particularly with the shortage of priests, particularly in this country and in Europe.
Right.
And women are getting more and more... being in more and more positions of responsibility and even leading worship, performing weddings, that sort of thing, as a deacon. I think that's right. Can there be women deacons even?
No.
No, goodness. Why
no.
not?
We really believe that, and John Paul II, who has been echoed and followed by Benedict XVI, has said that the church does not have the authority to ordain men. That authority was not given to them by Christ.
Ordain women.
Excuse me. Yeah, I'm sorry. Ordain women. And that is something that they have not been given that authority, they can't pass that on. So it's something that it's just how Christ decided to establish his church.
Now, you can be a campus director and be female of Focus. Why is that?
I would like to.
Don't you have authority over Mitch?
She does, actually, and she's actually very talented, as you can see, and Focus women are amazing women, but we believe that equal isn't always the same on everything with men and women, and that's kind of a touchy subject now in our culture, but she's better than me at many things, but the simple fact that we feel that Christ, he clearly wasn't afraid to proclaim the truth on other issues, and in fact, it led to his death. And if he felt that women could be, we feel that he would have called them. He was around many talented women, and yet he chose 12 men. So we take that very seriously.
Katie, any thoughts on that issue?
I guess I feel the exact same way. And
I'm sorry, I said Katie instead of Carrie.
That's just fine, Steve. No problem. I completely agree with the church teachings, and I feel honored to have the position I do as a woman in the church. And I feel like the church has really taken a beautiful stand in regard to femininity, particularly John Paul II in his writings about the dignity and vocation of women. I think it's very empowering, and I am honored to be a Catholic for many reasons, that being one of them.
And I think within Focus, we've seen a remarkable phenomenon in the course of our existence over the past 9 years, where we've had well over 80 men join the seminary. We've had even just three men, the first Focus men to be ordained to the Catholic priesthood in the past year, who are now serving on Focus campuses. And we've also had over 30 women join consecrated religious life, which is something that's we're seeing more and more in our present time right now, which is incredibly exciting that young adults, young Catholics are very excited and eager to give their entire life to the church, both men and women in their respective roles.
Are all three of you cradle Catholics, or are any of you converts?
We are. We have a teammate that's my roommate's not, but I was.
I am as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm a cradle Catholic.
We're down to our last 30 seconds or so. Any last words that you'd like to share about Focus?
I think we are just, I can probably speak on behalf of our team here, they're just very excited to be involved with this organization. I think for each of us, it's been instrumental in our growth of faith. We would not be here if it hadn't really brought Christ in a more real way to us in the fullness of the Catholic Church. And organizations like Focus are sprouting up around the country, and I think it gives me incredible hope. The happiness that I've been able to experience as a Catholic missionary, living a life very much in contradiction to what the world tells me will give me happiness, is just another indication on a personal level for the importance and necessity of our presence on the college campus. And it is with that I think each of us can wake up each morning with a great sense of purpose and zeal and passion, recognizing our call to greatness and our call to give our lives to something that is so much bigger than ourselves, and then to invite our peers to that as well.
Is there a website where people who'd like to learn more about Fellowship of Catholic University Students could go?
There is, Steve. focusonline.org.
We've been talking with three missionaries today from Focus, Fellowship of Catholic University Students here at the University of Illinois. They're part of a team of seven young adults who, after their college years, have come to this campus as part of this national movement of focusing on university students. Angela Teltorst is the campus director. If you'd like to contact her, call Newman Center on campus. Carrie DePlazes and Mitch Menarek, welcome. Thank you for being on Keeping the Faith.
Thank you, Steve.
My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. I'm the director of the University YMCA on campus. If you'd like more information about the Y, do call me at 337-1500 during the week. That's in area code 217. Next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be taking a little bit of a break because it's Christmas Eve. Following, on December 31, Sally Weeks will be our guest, which she'll be talking about the Baha'i faith. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. Thank you.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
In the real world where we take out the garbage, we sometimes brush up against wonder and awe. We all look for it in different places. Some of us find it in God, like the great mystic poet Rumi. Others find it on terra firma. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, Electrons to Enlightenment, Part 5, Awe and Wonder. It's to the best of our knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana.
We wish to thank a special group of friends of WILL, the members of the WILL Legacy Circle, for providing for the future of WILL Radio through gifts that they've planned in their wills and estate documents. For more information about making such a gift, call Don DeBeard at 217-333-0850. Thank you.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, cloudy with scattered showers, the low around 40 degrees with northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, the high in the upper 40s and north winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy and colder with a low around 30 degrees and north winds around 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.